Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm Johan, and today we'll be talking a little bit about water on Mars. It's flowing, and it's not just a promotional stunt for Ridley Scott's new movie. Amazon muscles into the sharing economy with Amazon Flex. Edward Snowden joins Twitter and follows just one account, the NSA. Twitter looks to break the shackles of 140 characters. And Google stays coy about how their self-driving cars will go to market. All that and more coming right up. Let's get started. All right, we gotta start with the big one, which is water on Mars. Liquid water. Now, we've been able to identify in the past with pictures from space orbiting Mars that there's ice in the polar ice caps, the north and south, relatively speaking, of Mars, frozen up. There's plenty of it there. But there's not been evidence up to this point of flowing liquid water in a situation where, you know, it's not just a little bit of the ice and the ice caps melting. So this is far away from where the ice caps in Mars are located. Now, they were able to make this discovery, NASA, thanks to the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and an extraordinarily high-resolution camera called the Hi-Rise Camera. And they were able to observe a single spot on the Martian surface and continually photograph it over the course of a year. And by watching this single portion of the surface where they had suspected there might be something like flowing water, they were able to watch this salty brine, as they call it, slowly seep across a hillside, starting from the top and then seeping down through the soil. Not a huge amount of water, but enough to darken the soil so that they could see it from orbit with this crazy camera of theirs. And this is only possible due to the extremely high resolution of the camera, which we're thankful to have orbiting, and we've managed to send some pretty cool tools out there to Mars to observe this. But this is probably the biggest discovery that they've been able to make after sending this camera out there. Now, it's not a ton of water, but flowing liquid water is a potential source of life. Now, we know that things can survive in frozen water, but usually they started off or lived and thrived in flowing liquid water, and then were frozen and are able to survive that subsequently. But flowing water currently on the surface of Mars means there could be something alive and animated right now on the surface of Mars. Foreign, alien microbes, perhaps, living on the surface. And it's an excellent reason to get our asses to Mars. This just happens to coincide pretty nicely with the movie The Martian that's coming out. Ironically, the premise of that movie is that there is no water on Mars, and this guy, Mark Watney, who gets stranded out there, has to find a way to subsist on the water that they've brought over. But, you know, maybe he should have waited until this discovery came out. Super interesting, super exciting, and hopefully a catalyst for more specific scientific missions to investigate this particular source of water more thoroughly can now get kicked off. And maybe we should send a human out there, you know, taste it. I don't know. Google's been out promoting its self-driving car initiative, or should I say Alphabet has been out promoting its self-driving car program a great deal lately, but they continue to not talk about exactly how they would distribute this technology. Now, they've demoed a cute little button, bulbous, Volkswagen Beetle-ish kind of car already that is their new test bed for this technology that's been driving around in California lately. and they've been putting as many road miles on it as possible. But when asked whether or not they're going to manufacture this thing themselves, they say they're pretty eager to work with partners. They're focused on working with partners. And I think a lot of people working in the auto industry in the U.S. and probably globally are incredibly curious whether or not they do plan on going it alone, because if they would, that would be incredibly disruptive. But there's a couple different ways they could do this. They could build these out and lease them. They could work with a partner company to implement this technology into their existing cars that are already out on the market. Certainly, there are companies out there that are building their own cars and are working on their own autonomous driving software. There's components of that already in a lot of cars out on the market today, things that will at least park themselves. There are cars that will keep themselves in their own lane while driving on the freeway. But Google and exactly how they're going to get into the market remain a little bit of a mystery, although arguably, or one might speculate, they are probably the most advanced in terms of developing this technology, and certainly in putting the most road miles on whatever test beds they have available. They recently brought in the former head of Hyundai US to run their program, so bringing in seasoned car executives certainly seems like a sign that they're getting pretty serious, or at least are reaching a stage where things are going to get a little more complicated, and they might need somebody with business experience who's navigated the landscape of US auto manufacturers to start taking care of business, as it were. Other questions out there in the space remain for companies like Tesla, who are definitely working on this technology and thinking about it and have expressed interest. Uber is all over this, and they've hired tons of talent from the autonomous driving space, especially from strong research universities in the US, poaching talent all over the place. And of course, Apple remains a big question mark. They've hired a lot of people, especially some senior folks out of Tesla, for their much rumored, very little known about car program, whatever that is. But things are certainly heating up in the space, and I think it's quite likely we're going to start hearing some big announcements pretty soon. Amazon gets into the incredibly crowded people with free time as a service industry. They have announced Amazon Flex, which is basically Uber for people delivering your packages. They are saying that people working for Amazon Flex could earn between $18 to $25 an hour delivering packages directly to the doors of excited, ready, and waiting Amazon Prime members, or just about anybody who's ordering packages from Amazon. Now, this has kind of been an expected development somewhat. They've already outsourced some of their package delivery in order to meet their aggressive delivery deadlines. They've used partners who are not UPS, who are not FedEx, who are not the U.S. Postal Service to try to bridge that gap and try to get you your packages within 2 days. Now, they've built distribution centers in a lot of places to get as close as possible to the end destination of where packages are going. They've done a lot of work to optimize and increase the efficiency in which they can get these packages to you. But this is just one more step, crowdsourcing, finding people who are probably closer to your home than, say, somebody on a set delivery route, and maybe more efficiently routing these packages. It's interesting to hear about the amount that they're offering per hour, because it gives just a tiny sliver of insight into what their costs are for delivery. So $18 to $25 an hour, if that's something they're offering up to individual contractors, which these people most likely will be, that probably approximates their cost for third-party vendors who've already been doing this work for them. So clearly this is at least at parity, or maybe even a savings compared to what they've been doing already, which is very interesting. So I guess all drones have to do is get cheaper than $18 to $25 an hour, and we'll have ourselves a ballgame. All right, it's time for the podcast where I find time to talk about Twitter, which I often do, probably because I'm so often on it. But an important new account that you might want to follow on Twitter, starting today, Edward Snowden is on Twitter. The account name, @Snowden, pretty easy to find. If you look him up, he's probably got a few hundred thousand followers already. Not surprising that he would ratchet up that many that quickly. Funny thing about his account, though, is he's only following one other Twitter account, and that is the NSA Twitter account, which I find pretty hilarious. I imagine they'll be following him soon in the Twitter fashion, unlike the other ways, which they have undoubtedly been following him for a very long time in the non-Twitter sphere. But he's there, probably going to be an interesting account. No doubt he'll be tweeting a lot about internet security, privacy, and other things that I also seem to find pretty fascinating. So he's out there, give him a look. Other news on the Twitter front is Twitter might be considering changing one of its biggest structural components, that is the 140 character limit. So interim CEO Jack Dorsey, who is one of the original Twitter employees, has talked a lot about changing up the formula at Twitter and not necessarily leaving things as they have always been, because they're looking for a lot of aggressive growth and they're trying to find it wherever they can because things have been anemic. And so one of the things that's been the same for a long time and just taken for granted has been the 140 character limit. It's a microblogging site, or at least it used to be until you could embed videos, you could embed articles, or you could embed tweets within tweets, which is a way to get around the character limit that already existed, or post photos. And a lot of users have hacked their way around the text limit by posting screenshots of text, which, you know, you should maybe take that into consideration. If a not insignificant number of your users are trying to bypass these limitations on your service by using other tools that you've implemented, that might be a pretty good sign that people are ready for an actual fully supported version of this particular feature, which is allowing more than 140 characters. How that's going to happen, who knows? But if it's searchable, if you can use hashtags in it, if you can put links in it, if you can have rich text or formatting or italics and bolding and headings and what have you, I mean, who knows what this change could actually be? But anything that lets you expand outside the bounds that they've already set for their users could be pretty powerful, and certainly a sign that they're not married to convention. And this is only the interim CEO, although killing this sacred cow might just mean he's got eyes on a more permanent gig. Jack Dorsey is also the CEO of Square, and they're doing pretty well, and it seems like they might need a guy working full-time, but Elon Musk doesn't have any problems running two giant, very progressive, very active tech companies, so maybe Jack Dorsey will take a page out of his book and run two very big things all at once. All right, for this very last stretch, just going to mention two little factoids. One for Apple, who has just announced, or not announced, rather they've shared that every single year they do about $25 billion in enterprise sales. This is sort of the darling company of direct-to-consumer sales. So it's interesting to hear them put an actual dollar figure around what they're selling to the enterprise, presumably selling large batches of computers, phones, and tablets directly to these companies to issue to their employees. Now, this is a company that basically got adoption through the back door. It created a consumer product that was so good that people were carrying around Apple iPhones alongside their already issued work phones, pretty much forcing the issue of these companies allowing or whitelisting or enabling people to use their iPhones. Because at a certain point, everybody, the execs down to all of the regular workers had iPhones and were using them all the time. And it just didn't make any sense not to make your iPhone the de facto phone for the business. And now they are selling directly to the business alongside the consumer side, which obviously represents another massive portion of their business, much bigger than $25 billion a year. But it's interesting that things have come full circle, and now companies have just gone straight to the source, so why wait? The other interesting phone-related thing, or maybe this isn't interesting, but BlackBerry is still alive. This may surprise many of you, and it certainly surprises me every single day when I think about it. But they are planning on releasing an Android phone, which seemed like the last thing they would ever do. They pretty much were content on going down with a ship and riding it all the way down with their custom operating system, which they had built, and built on their custom hardware. They had their entire ecosystem, which they bet the farm on, and then they lost most of the farm, and then they laid off most of the farmhands, and now whoever's left has decided that maybe it's time they pinned their fortunes onto another dominant player in their ecosystem. Seems like a smart move. It's going to have a physical keyboard, which is one of the things they're very well known for. So we'll see if they are able to pull themselves out of what is the mother of all ruts for a tech company. See if they can reverse their fortunes. It might be a little bit too late, or a lot too late, because it's been a very long time since BlackBerry's had Mindshare as something that you want to buy. But there it is. Reminds me a little bit of Nokia pinning their fortunes to Windows Phone, and that worked out not that well, but they were acquired by Microsoft, so in a sense, they were salvaged, and then most of their employees were laid off, and then just a portion of that company, a shell of it, remained to form the phone portion of the Microsoft phone division. And they're still spitting out phones to this day, but they made a bet, and they were eaten alive for it. Although I don't think Google has any plans to acquire any more phone companies. They learned their lesson on that one. All right, well, thanks for listening in. This has been episode 8 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm Johan. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Johan Benedict with a K, or visit me on my website, johancodes.com. Otherwise, I'll see you guys here next week, probably around the same time. Thanks for tuning in. Music provided under Creative Commons license by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.